Welcome to Real Time, a weekly audio tour of places and ideas hosted by George Cole.
If you were flying, you would have to be well above 16,000 feet, because that's how high and more the summits of many of the mountain ranges are in the Andes along the Pacific coast in South America. To even imagine what Dea Slausberg and Greg Treinisch of Bozeman accomplished, you need to go better than that. You probably need to go to their website, acrosstheandes.com. For Dea and Greg, it was a two-year adventure and 7,800 miles. I presume most of that on foot, if not all of it. We'll find out in a minute. The trek across the Andes. Recently in Washington, D.C., Dea Slausberg and Greg Treinisch were honored as the Adventures of the Year for 2008 by National Geographic. Dea and Greg, welcome both. First of all, what was the reason that you said, yes, we want to do this trek? What got you to Ecuador in the beginning of the trek? Dea?
Well, there were a few main reasons. Like big picture kind of reasons, I wanted to learn more about the planet and learn more about my place on the planet, in the planet as part of it, and learn more about sustainable ways of living, have interactions with people who lived in the high mountains.
Now, this is a very intellectual discussion. Had you been to the Andes area of South America before?
I had not, no.
Where do you come from originally? You're in Bozeman now.
I'm from upstate New York.
Were you trekking mountains as a young child before you went on this adventure? You must have had some experience.
I grew up hiking most days in the woods, but both of us were working as wilderness therapy guides in Colorado before we went on the trip. So we were backpacking for a living, taking kids up into the mountains.
Well, that helps. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Greg Treinisch, what about you and the reasons why you decided to go on this, using a mild word, trek?
Yeah, I think everything I do to excess, and that's kind of a habit of mine. As for South America, it's just the chance to be in the Amazon Basin, to be in the 20,000-foot peaks of the Andes, and to be in the driest desert in the world, to see a new culture, to be with a new language. All those things, combined with really needing some time for myself, for us, to really explore where we were at in our lives and where we were going. All those things led us to Papaquiaq, to Ecuador, where we started.
You actually completed the trek on April 17, 2008, but let's rewind the tape. Take us back. I presume there was a trailhead somewhere. Walk us through those first days on this wild hike.
Yeah, trailhead's an extremely loose term. We actually spent about 50% of this trek off of trail bushwhacking. So the beginning of the trek, we did choose to start at a known trek called the Trek of the Condor. So this is in Papaquiaq, Ecuador, and neither of us spoke very good Spanish. We had some basic high school Spanish, and we get to so we basically find our way to the bus station in Quito, where we flew into the not the capital, but one of the biggest cities, and we're driving up on the bus, and I just remember being in the bus and looking up and Dea just kind of grabbing me and gasping at one point and saying, "What's that?" And looking up and seeing our first 19,000-foot peak. Pretty spectacular moment, both of us, tears in our eyes. And I think that was the moment, we've talked about it since, obviously, and that was the moment where Dea says she kind of realized what we had gotten ourselves into. And for me, it was maybe getting off that bus and the driver calling out Papaquiaq and us getting off and our packs getting dropped on the side of the road and it pulling away in a plume of dust and us kind of looking at each other saying, "What now?"
And it was the two of you alone. You weren't part of a planned trip or, you know, a guide that says, "We'll take you out there for the first 7 days and then we're going to say sayonara," or adios in this case.
We were very much on our own. We had a book at that point that loosely described this trek. We wanted to start with something that was semi-known. So we did find this trek in a book, and it wasn't at all a trail that we could follow around these peaks. It was a very loose description, like follow this riverbed for a while and then turn right after this mountain. So it was just us kind of scrambling the first few days.
Okay, back to the basics, Greg, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Greg, as we were going there, but the weight of your packs, I assume you didn't run into a nice little bistro every 30 or 40 miles to have dinner in, a little bit of wine.
Yeah,
how do you prepare for a trip like this? I mean, it's totally beyond my comprehension.
Yeah, really, you just have to be prepared for everything. So our packs weighed about 45 pounds, and that was a rough average, sometimes definitely upwards of 55 or so and down to 35. But you just have to be prepared for everything. You know, we had gear for 20,000 feet in negative 10 degree temperatures, and we had gear for the middle of summer, 80 degrees in the jungle. And really, that was it. We learned not to expect anything. We had to accept everything throughout the whole trek.
So did you have, excuse the vocabulary, freeze-dried food? Did you? What type of food did you eat? And one of the things that concerned me in your website, your description, Greg, you said for about more than 50% of the time, you really were lost, and you said lost in the real sense.
Well, food was, it varied, and basically we took what we could get. As far as your local freeze-dried foods or the things that you find here that are great for hiking, they just don't exist down there. Hiking isn't, in Ecuador especially, we were walking into these villages where they would tell us we were the first people ever to be there, the first outsiders. So freeze-dried food hasn't quite made it there yet. but cans of tuna have, and noodles are pretty common throughout. They'd have cereals, cookies, crackers that we could pick up in these local tiny shops, usually the back of some lady's house that we would find our way to just by asking where's the local tienda, and they would take us there. Yeah.
What elevations? Is there any way to describe the elevations you were hiking or walking at on a daily basis? We're talking about summits of 16,000, 20,000 feet up in the air, significant. But the bushwhacking or the trails, when you do find one, any measure of the elevation?
In the north, it's definitely higher up. Like we'd probably average 14,000 to 16,000, just normal trekking and the normal passes we'd go over. And then as we got farther south into Patagonia, it went farther down, like we were closer to sea level and sometimes right on the ocean. But there was always huge elevation gain. It was really common to have to climb several thousand feet in an afternoon and then descend immediately and go right back up. And
I remember one week where we actually counted 56,000 vertical feet in 6 days. Which was, yeah.
Repeat that again.
56,000 in 6 days. So
vertical feet.
Twice the average. Yeah.
Any problems with altitude sickness?
Maybe a little right off the bat. And then on our first big summit when we did 19,000 feet the first time, we were sick anyway with all sorts of stomach parasites and giardia. Greg got typhoid fever. We both had dysentery. So that combined with the elevations at the beginning made us hurting quite a bit.
Greg, how were you treated for typhoid fever, or were you?
I was. The healthcare system down there is surprisingly effective and accessible. So we went into this whole endeavor assuming that we'd find huge swaths of poverty and people living without things like healthcare. The reality is in every central city, and those exist quite frequently, in every single one there's a hospital, there's free access to it. I never paid more than $3 to go into an emergency room, get treated with antibiotics, IVs, see doctors, have stool samples, have everything that I needed, the same kind of healthcare I would have had here. I think the only difference was my IV was a little bit wider than it would have been here, so a bit more painful. But
and you probably had no insurance down there. In contemporary terms in the United States, that's a different picture, isn't it? Emotionally, Dea, and, you know, Greg, same question. This must have been a time or several times where in the internal parts of your mind, you said, enough, I'm out of here. This was a mistake.
Oh, yeah, daily. We were constantly questioning what we were doing. We were in situations we shouldn't have been in quite frequently, just because of bad maps or because of bad suggestions by locals of where to go. We would find ourselves in, yeah, situations we wouldn't have preferred to have been in. And it always left us questioning what we were really doing, if it was worth the risk we were taking. But usually when we got to those points, it was it was one of us kind of at a low, and the other one had a more positive attitude, and we kind of were able to balance each other out.
My guests today, Daya Schlossberg and Greg Treinisch, they live in Bozeman, and they've lived elsewhere. We'll talk about that in just a moment. They completed on April 17, 2008, an unheard-of adventure, 7,800 miles trekking the Andes and surrounding environs in South America, starting in Ecuador and moving south. They live in Bozeman. Their website is acrosstheandes.com. And they were named Adventurers of the Year in 2008 by National Geographic. This award from National Geographic, Greg Treinisch, do you submit an application to compete? Is it a reality TV show? Tell me more about this award.
Yeah, the award caught us by surprise. It's obviously something that we had heard of and kind of joked about once or twice on the trip of wouldn't it be cool if that happened, but never really expecting it at all. And then one day out of the blue, we got an email, actually, that said, hey, you guys are finalists for the Adventure of the Year Award. Can you tell me more about your trek? And they set up an interview with us and told them all about the trek. And then about 3 weeks later, got a call that said, you guys want to come to Washington. You've been selected. There was never an application process. I don't know if somebody nominated us or how they heard about us exactly, but
it's a great honor. And Daya, compliments and congratulations to both you and Greg. What does this award, what has it meant? Because, okay, you're back from the trek. You're both involved in outdoor activities professionally and educationally in the Bozeman area. Has the award brought new doors opening, like guest lecture slots, whatever?
We are doing a bit more lecturing because of it. National Geographic has invited us to speak a couple times at their Adventures and Travel Expo that they host around the country. We've been invited by several, trail committee conference things to speak at their annual events. And I think our book deal probably had something to do with
so you're working
our book deal that we're working toward.
You're working on a book. Okay.
We've gotten more interest because of it, I think.
Any little theories that you want to divulge? We don't want the secret of the story, but on the other hand, is the book going to be about the trek, which would be well enough alone, or is it going to be about people who take on challenges that are unknown, or a little bit of both?
I think that we're looking to really capture what we learned. Our goal in this whole thing setting out was to learn as much as we could, both about sustainable ways of life and just other cultures in general, so that we could come back and share that. So I think a mission for both of us in the book is going to be to really share those lessons and to really hit home the individual stories that make those people actual people living with individual stories and living an incredibly sustainable and incredibly innovative ways of life.
How do you define sustainable?
Living with an impact that's less than living with an impact that's renewable, that can sustain itself, an impact that doesn't take away, but still uses the resources around you. So we encountered thousands of people living with the resources immediately around them, and even combining things like adobe shacks with solar panels. So really cool, innovative ways of life that if people out in the Pampa, in the middle of nowhere, 300-400 miles from big cities can live sustainably, we can here in Bozeman for sure.
Dan, Greg, I'm going to describe you as professional outdoors people. And first of all, a pre-question. How did you prepare for this journey as far as physically getting in shape or whatever the right phrase is? Greg, you said that you're originally from Cleveland, Daya from upstate New York. What were your kind of workloads before you said, okay, we're going on a plane to Ecuador? What did you do to get set? Marathoners train, boxers train. What did you folks do?
Well, like I was saying before, we worked as wilderness therapy guides. So we were backpacking for our living, carrying big packs, and we lived in Leadville, which is in Leadville, Colorado, which is 10,200 feet and climbing peaks all the time up to 14,000 feet. So we were fairly used to elevation and used to backpacking and going long distances.
I think one of the biggest parts of the preparation was just letting our parents know that we were going to stay safe. I had to promise Daya's parents a few times that she'd come back with all 10 fingers and toes. I got lucky on that one, too.
The reaction of parents, the reaction of friends, what was it? Were there some people that understood completely and then perhaps others with a different point of view?
I don't know that anybody really understood completely. We certainly didn't at that point. We had no idea what we were getting into. We thought we were taking off for a year and ended up doubling. Our families were really nervous and scared, as were we. I think our friends thought we were a little nuts.
Gee, I wonder why. Now, the actual trek was a two-year experience?
22 months.
22 months. Mm-hmm. Did you take, hopefully, some days off, some weeks off, and just hang out in a village? Or was it just like, okay, we got to do 15 miles today or we're going to be behind schedule?
Both of those things. We knew if we took time off and just spent a few days with the family that we would fall behind, and we still did that because that was really important to us.
When Bea says fall behind, it was essential that we kept up with the seasons. We were constantly racing to get ahead of the snows in Patagonia, constantly racing to beat the summer when we would be in the desert. So constantly trying to stay just a step ahead of the weather and the climate.
Thinking it through, is there anything now or things now that you would do differently on this particular trek, this particular adventure through the Andes going Ecuador south?
It's really hard to say. There are things that we would definitely do differently to make it a bit safer, a bit more comfortable. But then it wouldn't be the same experience. We wouldn't have gotten the same lessons from it. So I think I would have a really hard time saying that I would want to change any part of that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely would have started a few months earlier. We started in June. Had we known what we know now, probably would have started in April. Just to give us a bit more of a head start to stay ahead of those seasons. And it would have been impossible to know what we know now. The maps we had were 1 to 1 million scale wall maps in some cases that we were using to navigate by. So,
you mentioned typhoid fever and, of course, intestinal problems. Any falls or accidents that really almost brought this 7,800-mile adventure to an end?
On the very first day, Dea fell into a ravine and broke her wrist.
Oh, no.
That was great.
Luckily, I could still keep hiking with a hurt wrist. There were a couple close calls, like rocks falling down behind one or the other of us. And if we had been too close to each other, it could have been a trip under. But we just tried to be as smart and as safe as possible and knew to avoid those kinds of things. And we were lucky a lot, too.
And I ask this question with respect. Was there a time when you were delirious? Were you either too much sun or too much cold or hypothermia? Where, you
we
know, it was just crazy dirt. Time, crazy time.
We call that lunchtime.
What pops into my head first are the long stretches on the Bolivian Altiplano. Just day after day of completely flat, high walking, sun beating down, and you just walk for hours and hours and look around and realize that your view hasn't changed in the least, and that definitely messes with your mind a bit.
Did you run into other people on the bushwhacking or the trails when you found them? I mean, you know, were there tour groups from Denver down there doing a little day hike? Or
we didn't actually see other backpackers until about a year and a half into the trek. We did see one or two groups of people with tour groups with donkeys going over, like the Salcantay Peak is a pretty famous peak in the Cordillera of Vilcabamba in southern Peru. So we saw some people there, but really rare. And every time that we did see one, I think they thought we were pretty clingy people, because after a year and a half of talking to each other, it gets pretty mundane sometimes.
And you're still together. That's great.
Yeah.
Yep. We managed to make it work.
My guests today, Dea Schlossberg and Greg Trinish of Bozeman, trekking across llama tracks and Incan roads when they could find them. They did the unthinkable. On April 17, 2008, they completed their trek moving south from Ecuador along the Andes in South America, sometimes mountaintops 16,000 or above, sometimes next to the ocean. A two-year mountain journey covering 7,800 miles. They live now in Bozeman, working as educators, lecturers, outdoors people professionally. Their website, acrosstheandes.com. And they were recently named Adventures of the Year in 2008 by National Geographic, which was, you know, certainly an honor. Give us a little geography lesson. I have a map in front of me here of South America. Okay, Ecuador, and walk us south on these 7,800 individual miles.
So we hiked almost the entirety of Ecuador. We started just south of the border. There's a whole lot of political conflict around the border area with Colombia. So we opted to start just south of that. So all of Ecuador, all of Peru, into Bolivia, and then we kind of split our time south of that between Argentina and Chile. We were kind of straddling the border, crossing back and forth very frequently, and all the way down through Patagonia like that.
And when was the end? Where was the end? April 17, 08 was the end as far as chronology, but physically, where were you at?
We were on Cabo San Pio, which is the southernmost point of the island of Tierra del Fuego. So we actually cheated a little, didn't swim the Strait of Magellan and took a boat across it. But
that's amazing. I'm looking at the map now. I mean, you know, just whoa. Was CNN there to greet you?
Not quite. We were actually a few days away from Ushuaia, from being able to hitchhike to Ushuaia. So we finished the trek and had a great night there. I actually proposed that night at the end of the continent, and then wound up having to walk 2 days back so that we could hitchhike and get to Ushuaia, so then we could officially be done.
But once we finally got a ride, we ended up having to help this family chop wood in exchange for their ride before we could even get back.
Were the people, here's a huge generalized question, were the people friendly along the trek?
That's pretty safe to generalize as incredibly friendly, yeah.
That's good to hear.
We were welcomed in as members of families. I'm the godfather of two kids down there.
Wonderful.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
Now, I'm going to guess, you don't have to tell me, I'm going to guess you're in your mid to late 20s. Am I in the ballpark? Okay.
Yep.
You've done this journey, 2 years, 7,800 miles, most of it bushwhacking. I cannot even imagine bushwhacking for 3 hours, but I know people will beat me up for that. But anyway, here you are, not 30 yet. What's going to happen with the rest of your life? You know, what challenges are ahead? What do you do when you reach literally this intellectual and physical summit early on in your life? What are your thoughts?
I think there's always a lifetime more to learn. I'm planning to start a master's in science and natural history filmmaking as long as I get accepted.
You're at Montana State University in Bozeman. It's a good program.
Yeah, I've heard good things. I'm really excited. But I want to use that to kind of continue the same line of learning and growth and trying to use art and experience to do environmental education, to expose people to the rest of the world and inspire people to learn more about it.
Great.
Yeah, I definitely want to stick with adventure and keep exploring our world. I will be starting a degree in wildlife biology, also here at Montana State, in August, and hoping to use that in-depth learning to take me throughout the world and combining adventure travel and adventure experiences with a deeper understanding of wildlife biology and how I can incorporate those two.
And as all three of us know, in the Bozeman area and beyond, in Montana and Wyoming, there are all kinds of people who are adventurers, and some that maybe for realities in their life are still waiting for that big challenge, thinking about how they could do it. What advice would you give them, whether it's an adventure in Alaska, South America, Asia, Africa, or who knows, up the Bridgers? What advice?
I think if you really want to do something, you just need to make it happen. There's not going to be a perfect time. You're never going to have enough money saved up. You're never going to have a convenient time to take off work. Like if you want to do something, you have to just go after it and make it happen.
Greg?
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. I think that to be researching and trying to plan and to get all these perfect guides together and all that, it's just not necessary, first of all. And second of all, it's never going to work out how you planned. So be flexible, be willing to accept whatever comes your way, and then go experience wherever it is that you want to see.
And there are ups and downs.
Oh, there's huge ups and downs. There's many, many times when I made the decision that, at least in our situation, it was a decision literally between keeping walking or sitting there and dying. And yeah, those were some low moments for sure when I questioned which to choose.
Speaking of walking versus other forms of transportation, as we record this interview, Greg Treinisch of Bozeman and Dea Schlossberg, Greg has crutches, and he had an accident at Bridger Bowl recently. And so I'm going to put this into perspective of here you've gone 7,800 miles, 2 years across the Andes and beyond. But on the other hand, something happens to all of us sometime, someday, that is a complete surprise. Tell us about what was going through your mind as you were laying in the snow up in the Bridgers waiting for the ski patrol or whoever to say, come on, let's go down the hill and get this treated.
I repeated not broke, not broke, not broke a few times. And I lucked out with my bones, not so much with my ligaments. But the trek didn't come up. It's just I was thinking about how I'm going to be ready to go hiking this summer and how long I was going to be out was my biggest concern. Just when will I be back on my feet? I hope this doesn't take very long. And then, trying to stand up at that point and not quite being able to. But, my biggest concern was for the future.
Dea, any observations on limitations?
I think it definitely makes us appreciate when we are fully capable. I've been more aware of myself just able to walk around the house and get things done, and it's easy to take those things for granted. So it's a good lesson.
Mm-hmm. My guest today, winners of the Adventures of the Year Award, not given lightly, the year 2008, and the award came from National Geographic and their allied magazines and editorial projects. The guests, Dea Schlossberg and Greg Treinisch of Bozeman, they literally completed on April 17, 2008, a trek across the Andes and the environs of South America from Ecuador south all the way across the South American continent, moving south on the Andy ridges and valleys and near the beaches from the Pacific Ocean on. A two-year mountain journey, 7,800 miles. They are now here in Bozeman. They are working as writers, educators, lecturers, and my best to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Real Time, hosted by George Cole. For archived audio and additional information about this program, visit www.ypradio.org. Real Time is produced in Bozeman by George Cole and in Billings by Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio.